To this first meeting of our work group this afternoon. It looks like we're a small group today, but I know that there are a lot of good minds in the room, and I know that there will be others that will be joining us. I really want to thank everyone for agreeing to participate in this work group. I know that the charge before the Healthcare Access Commission is very large, and it is my hope that this work group, along with the other work groups that have been set up, will truly work to support the overall goals and mission of the Healthcare Access Commission. We have a pretty tight time schedule that has been given to us courtesy of Senator Berglund and Representative Huntley, but I know that we're up for the challenge. My co-chair in all of this is Representative Abler. He is unable to be with us today, but is very interested in the discussion that we're having today. And so I'll just leave that note. I thought to begin with that it would be helpful to have the people that are here just briefly introduce themselves and maybe share sort of what brings you to this table today. And maybe we'll start with Ms. Ellefson.
I'm Stacey Ellefson. I'm the legislative assistant to Senator Ann Lynch.
I'm Katie Kavanaugh. I'm with Senate Counsel.
I'm Michelle Fishback. I'm state senator from District 14.
I'm Sue Stout, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association.
Holly Roden, I'm with the Service Employees International Union.
Okay. I'm Senator Linda Berglund, and I'm one of the co-chairs of the Healthcare Access Commission.
I'm Representative Tom Huntley, the other co-chair.
Okay. We won't mention by name the other members of our work group. I think we'll afford them that opportunity when we meet next. Why don't we get right into our first agenda item today? And Representative Abler and I had some conversations about how to sort of began this large task that's before us. I know that we both want to encourage members to be thinking during the course of the meeting today and moving forward about some additional things that we might want to take up or that we might want to give some further consideration to. But we're going to begin today talking a bit about heart disease and stroke prevention. And frankly, one of the chief factors that Representative Abler and I discussed in pulling this agenda together was the desire to focus on some preventative measures and cost containment. And what is out there or what do we need to be thinking about or consider so that we're constantly in the back of our minds trying to better address how do we further reduce the amount of uncompensated care that we have in our system and how and what specifically can we do that really focuses on primary prevention. And so with that, I will ask our presenters to come forward talk to us a bit further about what's called the 2004-2010 Heart Disease and Stroke Prevention Plan. And we have with us from the Department of Health, Dr. Shandling. Dr. Shandling, welcome to our work
Thank
group.
Thank you. Thank you. Is this working, Senator Lynch? Yep. Is it working? Thank you. My name is Dr. Stanton Shandling. I supervise the Heart Disease and Stroke Prevention Unit at the Minnesota Department of Health. And Before I formally get going here, I just want to make sure that people around the table have a couple of handouts that will be useful in the remarks that I will provide for you today. One is, first of all, the Minnesota Heart Disease and Stroke Prevention Plan. This is the executive summary. You should have that in front of you. Also, the work group action plan priorities. And then finally, a couple of fact sheets that our department has recently put out as it relates specifically to heart disease and stroke, which includes some of the updated information as relates to the burden of heart disease and stroke, not only from a clinical perspective, but also from a financial perspective as well, which I'm sure this illustrious group would like to hear about, right? So with that in mind, I thought I would preview some information for you. First and foremost is the 2004 to 2010 Heart Disease and Stroke Prevention Plan that was formally adopted back in May of 2004 and supported highly by Governor Pawlenty at the time. This particular report and strategic plan was put together by an illustrious group of who I call the Brain Trust as it relates to heart disease and stroke throughout the state of Minnesota. And the intent of the plan was to formulate what truly is needed in order to address this issue going forward from a prevention standpoint. Now, specifically when we talk about prevention, in the public health and clinical world, there are levels of prevention, and I think it's important for this committee to understand this as it relates to the work, not only as it, what we're doing related to this plan, but also to the work related to the work that we will be doing by virtue of grants that we have received from the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta. First of all, primary prevention. Primary prevention is really addresses, in this case, heart disease and stroke. What activities, what programs, what initiatives can we do to truly stop it? In other words, get at the problem before people present themselves into the healthcare arena. Now, first and foremost, you might think that that automatically lends itself to cost containment. In certain arenas, it does. The secondary prevention is the intervention aspects of healthcare that focus specifically on diagnosis and treatment. So the reason I make that distinction for this committee is this. The plan from the state of Minnesota really focuses on primary prevention efforts. In other words, what is it that we can do for the citizens of the state of Minnesota that really will address heart disease and stroke from a perspective of getting at it so that people do not present themselves into the system? CDC, on the other hand, the Centers for Disease Control, their focus is mostly now on secondary prevention, and this is nationwide. And their focus is on six different arenas in the secondary prevention area, namely treatment and diagnosis of. And in that case, we're looking at controlling high blood pressure. This is CDC now, controlling high blood pressure, controlling high cholesterol, knowledge of signs and symptoms of heart disease and stroke, how it is that we can improve emergency response throughout the country, improve quality of care, and then finally the issue of how is it that we can eliminate disparities. Now, going back, so that's the CDC perspective. Now let's go back to Minnesota. Again, back in 2004 when this plan was put together, the intent was how is it that we can start addressing it from a primary prevention perspective. And to that end, we came up with this illustrious report. And I'm sure most of you realize that there are many, many good strategic plans that are put together, and the proverbial, it lands up on a shelf somewhere. Well, it's the intent of the steering committee that's in place right now to take the heart disease and stroke prevention plan and work towards establishing action plans that through, hopefully, mechanisms we can get resourced, namely financed somehow or other, so that we can get some of these plans initiated. So this particular piece is, this two-page piece, are the action plans that were identified that address the five major goals of the plan and what the steering committee felt was truly the areas that we should be starting to address. Indeed, if we're going to try to make strides in addressing this particular plan. If you note, they are divided into five major areas consistent with the five goals of the overall strategic plan, namely developing an infrastructure and capacity to prevent heart disease and stroke, look at the prevention and the development of risk factors, detection and treatment of risk factors, how it is that we can prevent the reoccurrence or complication and disabilities from those that present themselves either with a stroke or a heart condition, and then finally the elimination of health disparities. Now for clarification purposes, what are we funded for? Okay? All of the money devoted to heart disease and stroke through the State Health Department comes from the Centers for Disease Control. We presently are under a new contract cycle where we received official notification of that award via email, and the official notification came July 3rd. That we received official notification from CDC that we were funded as what they define as a capacity building state. Typically, that means that those states, and there are 20 of them, including the District of Columbia, are funded at approximately $350,000 to $400,000. We are in a new contract cycle. We were funded very, very close to $400,000, which will be in place for the next 5 years. In addition, there are states around the country, 13 of those, that are funded at a higher level. It's called basic implementation. Those states are funded at approximately $1.2 million per year. The last round of funding from the Centers for Disease Control, we were not allowed to go after a higher level, although we are at that cusp right now where we definitely could go at that higher level. Funding at the federal level did not permit that, so we were okayed at the capacity building level, and that means that, yes, we can apply for a higher level funding next time around, but again, no guarantee. Overall, the work that we will be pursuing as it relates to the Centers for Disease Control-oriented funds will look at implementing heart disease and stroke wellness programs in businesses statewide. We will also develop plans for a statewide acute stroke transport and treatment system. These are all under the guise of the CDC now. We will also help to develop and implement policies and health systems for educating and treating patients. Notice treating patients. These are patients that are already in the system on high blood pressure and cholesterol control and management. Finally, we will maintain and expand our partnerships, including coordinating with a variety of different partners out in the community, that are addressing heart disease and stroke in various ways. So we will work to coordinate efforts as best we possibly can. And then the last is to collect all necessary data and report the incidence of heart disease and stroke for the state of Minnesota. In addition, so that's one grant, that's our $400,000 capacity building grant. In addition, you have probably heard in the news that we also received, and I will say surprisingly so, but we took it nonetheless, a grant for $563,000 per year for the next 5 years that will help establish the state's first stroke registry. We are one of six states in the country that were lucky enough to have received that. The stroke registry is aimed at improving quality of care for acute stroke patients in Minnesota hospitals, and we will be working with a variety of different hospitals around the state to coordinate that effort. Together, it's easy when you add those two up, it's easy to say you're close to $1 million, okay? $963,000 from Centers for Disease Control. Yet, what's most important from a public health perspective, my professional public health perspective, being in this business a long time, is how is it that we can truly get at the issue before? And what I mean by before is for any of us that have had any connection with anyone who is near and dear to you, whether it be a friend or family member, I would almost venture to say that someone, all of us, someone, we know someone that has been affected by heart disease and stroke. Therefore, I believe it's time that we really start, and maybe and hopefully not too late, we start addressing the issues of primary prevention, getting at it beforehand, so we don't have to see people in the system. I'll end my remarks by saying that for the first time in a long time, children that are born into this world today will probably have a lower life expectancy than you or any of us sitting around this table or in the audience. That's pretty sad. That's pretty sad. We need to start doing something, and one of the areas is in the heart disease and stroke arena. With that, I'll conclude my remarks, and I'm open for any comments or questions that you might have.
Thank you, Dr. Shandling. Questions or comments, committee members? One of the things that I thought was most striking about your comments, Dr. Shandling, and I thought you did a very good job of illustrating this for us, is that while certainly there is money, courtesy of the CDC, that's being put towards heart disease and stroke, priorities that come with that funding are not seeking to really address that primary prevention. And so I think, would it be a fair statement to say that the dollars from the CDC are not supporting the intent of the 2004-2010 plan?
Senator Lynch and members, in response to that question, I think it would be fair to say that the CDC money, whenever we're dealing with the issue of heart disease and stroke, whether it be at a primary or secondary prevention, they're complement. It's very complementary. But it's not necessarily focused, and that's what we're really dealing with here. It's the focus on getting at the issue before it presents itself, as opposed to dealing with those that are being treated or have disease or in disease states. So complementary, yes. Here's the other thing that we need to keep in mind. When we're dealing with secondary prevention, one of the major things that cardiac interventionists do is they try to get you back on your feet if you've had, for instance, a heart attack or if you're a neurologist, a stroke. The key, though, is what are they trying to do? They're trying to make you healthy again, but they're also setting you up with all the treatment that they've done to prevent another occurrence. So in essence, the treatment that's done becomes primary prevention, so to speak, for another occurrence. But we don't want to be there. What we want to do is not have people in the hospital. And if we're really talking about cost containment, that certainly is one way that we can do it, by keeping people out of the healthcare system.
Dr. Shanley, can you clarify for us, this plan was initiated in 2004. So what is the history of the state's funding of this plan to date?
Zero. Senator Lynch, zero. Up to this point, there's been no state funds that have gone into the implementation of this plan from a state perspective. Now, does that mean that things aren't being done? No. There are other entities out in the community that are doing things. For instance, there are major initiatives that are going on through the Heart Association, for instance, through the specific health plans that are taking certain initiatives upon themselves. But from a coordinated approach through the state, the answer is no. Okay.
Senator Lynch?
Yes,
just
Senator
as a follow-up to that, Doctor, have you requested? I mean, has there been legislative proposals that weren't, have you guys requested of the legislature to add money to this program?
Dr. Shanley.
Chairman Lynch, Senator Feinbeck. The answer to that is understanding the process that happens in state agencies when typically, and not always, but typically around October or November, requests go out throughout departments asking for what they believe are good initiatives that should have some potential legislative impact. And those rise up through the system, for instance, at the health department, and then eventually go into the commissioner's office, whereby they make choices one way or the other about what they believe are the best issues to forge ahead with. So have there been, like, for instance, yes, I have promoted the idea of, by the way, not just heart disease and stroke, but chronic disease funding. In other words, we're dealing with not only heart disease and stroke, but cancer and diabetes and asthma and that fall into the aegis of chronic disease. And so, yes, those have been formulated at one point or another, but they don't they haven't at this point necessarily risen to the top as far as arriving into the governor's budget, whether it be the existing governor or previous ones for that matter.
Doctor, I was just wondering if this, looking at the goals and stuff, which seem to be pretty numeric, I mean, they're measurable sort of goals, and mm-hmm. if this was kicked off in 04 and we're about halfway through the time period, is there any evaluative stuff that's gone on in terms of how the state is actually reaching the goals that have been laid out?
Yeah. Senator Lynch and Ms. Rudin, you'll have to excuse my bifocals. Good question. At this point, at the end of this month, we will have an update that will be published through our unit at the Heart Disease and Stroke Unit on the burden of heart disease and stroke, in other words, the numbers. And in addition, we are putting together a mid-course review for this particular plan. And that we hope to have out by mid to late September.
And Madam Chair,
yes,
are we going to make sure that we get copies of those? I'd like to see them.
Senator Lynch, absolutely. We will make those available.
And that'll be very timely for the time frame that we're under as well. And if I can just follow up to Senator Fishbach's comment about requests to support this plan, There was a request in the 07 legislative session for funding to at least in part support this plan. I think it's rather interesting to note, and I have had conversations with the department prior to this, that Senator Fischbach, on the upside, the positive is that that appropriation was actually a part of the final Health and Human Services bill. The downside, I guess, if you will, is that same appropriation was line item vetoed in the Health and Human Services bill. I bring it up today again, one, because I think that this really gets at that primary prevention, but perhaps the most startling thing about this whole thing is that the rationale provided for the legislature was that, in fact, there was funding for the CDC, and so consequently, state funding was not necessary. And we heard from Dr. Shanling that the department received notification of that those funds not until July. And I think the case has been made, or one could argue, you know, whether or not there needs to be additional resources put towards this plan or not. And that's certainly been a question. One more question. I think I must be asking questions for some other members of the committee who aren't here. But with the focus on trying to get at the prevention, do we know how many cases of undiagnosed high blood pressure there is in Minnesota? I mean, what is the magnitude of or the potential capacity?
Senator Lynch, the data on that is inconclusive, but we do know that the signs and symptoms of things that we are seeing in the environment lend themselves to high blood pressure. For instance, when we see a higher incidence of obesity, when we see a higher incidence of people not being active, when we see higher incidence of people who are admitted to hospitals with high cholesterol rates, that's a fairly strong indication that there are high blood pressure, high cholesterol-oriented issues. In addition, we are seeing, and one of the major things that we really do need to address in this state are disparities. And in the updated burden of heart disease and stroke, you will see that we are dealing with disparities in this state by population basis and by geographic disparities. For instance, the Afro-American population, as well as the American Indian population, are frankly off the charts as it relates to heart disease, and even more so as it relates to stroke. In addition, when I talk about geographic disparities, we're talking about regions of the state where we see a higher incidence of stroke and heart disease and mortality due to it by virtue of things such as access to care and emergency medical accessibility. For instance, when you're dealing with stroke, as one major thing, you have typically, if somebody is suffering from an ischemic stroke, which is basically a blockage of the artery in the brain, you have approximately a three-hour window to get appropriate medical treatment. If not, you will see potentially major complications. However, if you're able to get to a hospital within that, then you have a greater chance of being treated and living through a stroke, in this case, and living through it with less complications. So the real issue for our state going forward is addressing some of those disparities.
And Dr. Shanling, it strikes me that for the work of this committee and to support the Healthcare Access Commission, it seems to me that it would be useful information to have some data put together that would show us a map or picture of those areas that there are those greater disparities in. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking in a time of potentially limited resources, or we may have to limit our scope at some point, that if you could provide us at a future time with that kind of information, that might help the committee make some choices. And the second piece would be realizing that you don't have, excuse me, a number to give us for undiagnosed people. If you could provide us percentages or numbers indicating we know, I'm so sorry, we know that we have, you know, X numbers or X percentage of people who are, you know, have high cholesterol or obesity and those kinds of things. It strikes me that that might be useful information as we continue this discussion and further.
Senator Lynch, with regards to that, that's it's reasonable to get that kind of information. Just off the top of my head, for instance, if people are suffering from high cholesterol and are being prescribed statin drugs, for instance, and to lower their cholesterol, those are part of medical records, and we can start getting a handle on that through particular codes that we have, obviously in the aggregate. With regards to geographic distribution, our existing burden report is broken down by county. And so we actually have state maps where we actually show where higher incidences of heart disease and stroke. As a matter of fact, here is the report. I can leave this with you. Here's the actual report of which we will be giving updates to by the end of this month. And can I show you a map? Maybe. Well, like, for instance, here is the regional distribution for stroke-related deaths. And you can just see, wherever you see where it might be darker, we're seeing a higher incidence of stroke. Okay? So it is regionally distributed, and the numbers are out there by county.
Okay. Ms. Roden.
One other thing I was just thinking about is, it's if you were to think on the primary preventive stuff, if you were to have to sort of make a guess between how much of that is sort of the, you know, I don't know, kind of the responsibility of the medical establishment as such, you know, primary doctors, clinics, and how much of it is would sort of fall under the preview of schools and people that are worrying about diet and exercise and that kind of stuff. Do you have like a sense of a split on, I mean, if you had a pot of money and could kind of focus it where it would really make the most difference, how you would split that up?
Senator Lynch and Ms. Rudin, that's an excellent question, and I'm not sure I can do justice to it, except to say that there's always, shall we say, a combination effort that needs to be put forth as relates to intervention and prevention, not only from the medical establishment but from the public health and other groups as well, and those could be and should be, in my mind, educators. One of the things, and by the way, another area is in our business communities. Historically, and probably still going on, one of the best ways that we can start dealing with primary prevention is where we see captive audiences. And where do we see captive audiences? Well, for kids, it's in schools. And for many adults, it's in a working type of an environment. And so many initiatives now across the country are truly focusing on that. From a business perspective, you can imagine that the issue becomes return on investment, the infamous ROI debate. Well, fortunately, there are studies that have come out now where we're starting to see that those companies that are truly initiating prevention-oriented programs, for instance, in a worksite setting, are seeing a positive return on investment, and so consequently we're seeing more and more companies getting involved. It's a heart disease in stroke is truly a multivariable oriented diseases, and it takes a multivariate approach to prevention.
Senator Fischbach, did you have a question?
No, I got it.
All right. Thank Any you. Further questions, comments? All right. Dr. Shanling, again, we want to thank you for coming and participating with us today. For all of us, I know that it was a challenge to pull this first initial meeting together on a relatively short notice, and so we appreciate you.
Thank you very much. I would be remiss in not leaving you all with a great prevention message, right? And that would be eat less and move more. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And secondly, Dr. Shanling, I think, was joking with us when he said that, you know, there are other instances that we can probably all think of where great plans are put together of one shape or one form or another and ultimately end up on a bookshelf or maybe not even make it to the bookshelf. So thinking along those lines, we have asked Kristen Lonkerich from the department. No?
No.
She's looking like no?
No. It was Dr. Shanling.
I was thinking that someone from the department was going to speak with us a little bit about if they might have other plans or other ideas, other initiatives that are sitting that have been put together and prepared that this committee may want to at least be aware of and may wish to have some further discussion on at another time. Is there someone from the department that would care to speak to that? Or, I don't know, Ms. Kavanaugh, do you have any counsel that you want to give us along those lines? No.
Not that I'm thinking.
Okay. Well, that's a question. I guess I see Ms. Lonkerich here that perhaps the department could just get back to the co-chairs of this committee and so that we are made aware if there are other issue areas out there that have good plans put together that that we can further discuss and give some consideration to as we particularly, again, thinking along the lines of cost containment, that primary prevention and those kinds of things. And not on the agenda today, but I thought that everyone would be interested to know what our schedule will be. And I expect tomorrow, the Healthcare Access Commission is meeting tomorrow, and I have it on pretty good authority that they will be announcing that their next scheduled meeting will be on August 15th. And it is the intent of Representative Abler and I to have this work group meet on the day prior to the Healthcare Access Commission. We think those are generally going to be Wednesday meetings for the Healthcare Access Commission, so we will likely be meeting on Tuesday afternoons, again, prior to that. So our next work group scheduled meeting will be on Tuesday, August 14th. And you'll there'll be a notice sent out about that. What I'd like to ask members of the committee to do between now and then in terms of homework, I know that many of you here and the people that aren't here have some thoughts and have had an opportunity to give some thoughts to this work group and what we want to, what direction we want to go. It would be very helpful if you would send your thoughts, topical ideas, to the two co-chairs so that as we are putting together a schedule of our meeting dates and by topic, that we can
give that all due consideration. Representative Abler and I have, we have no calendar planned or no specific agenda planned thus far. I can tell you that there have been already a number of ideas that have been generated and filtered through, and we'll be in the process of trying to kind of match some of those areas up and redistribute if that seems appropriate, because there are a number of work groups out there. Questions? Senator Berglund and Representative Huntley have indicated that the majority of the work from this work group and the other work groups, as I understand it, is to be completed by the end of October. So in terms of your planning, I think this is going to be intense but short period of time. And I hope that at the August 14th meeting, that Representative Abler and I will be able to give all committee members a list of the future meeting dates so that we can maximize our attendance, and hopefully we'll have that prepared by topic area as well. I think that it will be of interest to members of the public and can help us in our planning and scheduling.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fishbach.
Are we thinking of noon meetings? Are we going to continue the noon time? Just as I jot down for August 14th, are we looking at noon, or are we just going to?
We are thinking of, I think we were talking about 1 o'clock on Tuesday afternoons. Okay. Today we moved up a little bit because there are a number of work groups that are trying to get off the ground before healthcare access tomorrow. So we wanted to accommodate that. All right. I would say to enjoy the extra hour in your day that we have given you today, because I can't promise that you will be so fortunate as we move forward in this work. So with that, we will adjourn. Thank you very much for coming, and we'll see you next time.
No, I used to be, but it was really painful.
Well, you know, as I was looking at this, it looked to me like, you know, there was a whole host of things about, you know, physical education for kids, and a whole bunch of things that really K-12, where you could really probably make a big impact.
Yeah. And that's been one of the arguments the folks have been talking about, you know, as there's the discussion of whether physical education should be required, and, you know, I know they've got the healthy foods.